Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 146 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, catching up with Ethan Glading, our European correspondent. Ethan has worked for a long time with CX Hairs as a photographer, and you've seen his work up on the site a lot, and he is relocated to Paris. And the cool thing about that is that we get a lot more insights into European racing and some coverage from there that we hope to expand on with Ethan going forward. But one of the first sort of fruits of that relocation is that he was at a race and saw that the CCB team was there and was able to catch up with two of our favorite people, Elaine Mayer and Spencer Petrov, who were in Europe racing on the road. So we're going to check in with Ethan first and have a little conversation with him. And then we're going to move on to the interviews that he did with Spencer and Lane. So that's pretty cool. I'm really stoked that we're getting that coverage for you all to catch up with some of our cyclocross racers as they are on their, what we like to call their off season. Yeah, and the other cool thing about that is I had this whole Cat 5 solo show planned out for you all where I was going to do a lot of hand-wringing about the state of the cyclocross calendar in the U.S., and it's too early for that. So we're just going to put that off for another time. Heck, maybe next week. But if you want to be part of that conversation, you can get in touch with me. Give me a call at 405-CXHAIRS or shoot me an email at feedback@CXHAIRS. Whatever's on your mind, and we'll chat about it in an upcoming episode. I also want to make sure that you all are taking care of your loved ones and your families. I want all of my cyclocross friends to be prepared, and what that means is that you all have life insurance, and the best place to get that life insurance is from healthiq.com. And if you go to healthiq.com/WAP, take a quick quiz there that will qualify you, and then go through the instructions on that site, and they'll get you some quotes and they'll get you set up, and it's something that you can do and take care of. I know for a lot of us who are parents and are sort of, you know, into our masters racing years, it's something that you don't want to think about, but it's out there. You should take care of it. Do it now. Help out yourself, help out your family, help out your loved ones. And then you can also help out the Wide Angle Podium Network by going to healthiq.com/WAP. Now, let's move on to the Wide Angle Podium Network, which is somewhere I need all of you to go visit because there is so much going on there that you need to get in touch with. First off, you know, I know we've talked about it, but make sure that you check out Roller Derby, which is our new partner with Wide Angle Podium Network. It's an awesome game. Once you figure it out, once you go over to the rollerderby.com site, you'll see what's going on. It's parimutuel betting. You can listen to, on the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, the Let It Ride show, and that is where Super Rookie Tim and Spencer are going through all of the propositions that Roller Derby has open, and even the ones that have already paid out, and they are going to give you their hot takes on where you should be putting your money, and also who's winning and what the state of the game is. And it's really fun community. It's interactive. There's a lot of people playing, and I think that you should be part of that. And if you're a member of the Wide Angle Podium, you get bonus points coming into Roller Derby. So it's definitely worth your while signing up. And then you also get entered into the Wide Angle Podium League. So that's another extra added bonus. Also, while you're at wideanglepodium.com, check out Grimper Brothers Coffee. You can get the Full Schleck or the Hello Cyclocross Friends blends. Both of them are amazing. I have consumed many bags of both, and I would like you to do the same. If you do that, again, proceeds come back to the network that you're going to be a member of by clicking on the Become a Member or the Donate button on the site. Yeah. Y'all got it? Cool. CXAirs on Instagram and Twitter. Follow me there. Again, feedback at CXAirs if you got any questions. 405-CX-HAIRS if you want to leave a voicemail for a future episode. And check out, please, check out the Heat Check on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/CX-HAIRS. I got videos. They're all mountain biking videos now, which I think you guys will dig. But after that, we're bringing the Heat Check into cyclocross. And it's going to be a really fun season. We're counting down the top 11 riders on the men's and women's side. Those rankings are going to change throughout the season. So it's a good place to have that conversation about who's hot and who's going up and who's going down. And we're going to bring that to you throughout the cyclocross season, but we've already started now with the mountain biking season. So I'd love you to check out Heat Check on youtube.com/CXers. Finally, last thing. I promise this is the last thing. We're going to have these conversations with Ethan and Spence and Lane. Last thing is that the Trek CX Cup and the Trek World Cup in Waterloo is happening September 20th through September 22nd. That on its own is exciting news. But on top of that, even more exciting, or even equally exciting, is that the Wide Angle Podium family is going to be out there as well. All of us, the Slow Ride guys, the Gravelac guys, Bike Shop CX, Consummate Athlete, we're all descending upon Wisconsin in September. We're going to have tents set up. We're going to be doing shows live from there, but we need you to come in person. It's going to make it, we are going to make it worth your while to be there, but we want to see the biggest crowd that Waterloo has seen for a World Cup cyclocross race so they can point to the Wide Angle, the power of the Wide Angle Podium Network and say, hey, this is the reason this is the biggest year ever for this World Cup. That's the goal. And it's just awesome. You got to be out there. September 22nd, 2019. Registration is going to open up soon. We'll let you know more about that when it does. So go out there, bring your bike, race once, race twice, and then hang out and see the World Cup. All right. Ethan Glading, Spencer Petrov, Lane Mayer, I want my $2. Let's get into it. Let's do that right now. All right, today on Cyclocross Radio, we have Ethan Glading, who's done a lot of work for us for CXAirs, but is now our European correspondent. Ethan, you're European based now.
That is true. Yeah, it's good to talk to you, Bill.
Yeah, good to talk to you too.
Yeah, so I've been over here, I guess, about 4 months, and shooting. Well, I shot a bunch of cross actually when I first got here, and now it's kind of middle of road season for me.
And that's kind of that was your bread and butter before you got into the cross stuff, right? With shooting road.
Yeah, I it's funny because I think a lot of people in the road scene know me as like that guy who shoots cross, and then a lot of people in the cross scene know me as that guy who shoots road. So, but yeah, no, I mean, I do a lot of both, so, and I enjoy both a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of cool too, because I mean, I figured maybe some clients or older clients that you had, now that you're in France, is sort of opening up some new opportunities to shoot for people.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, and the number of the sheer number of races over here is pretty astounding. I think sometimes you hear people saying, you know, that there's every year there's fewer and fewer races, or that, you know, certain big events just dominate and the other stuff's going away. But I mean, if that's the case, I can't imagine how much there was before.
Yeah. So where are you exactly?
I'm in Paris.
Okay. And so to go and cover, like, what's the last road race that you covered?
I think Trobro-Lyon was the last one that I worked at.
What's the scene like, you know, as far from your standpoint? I mean, getting in there, getting credentials, getting to the race. I mean, is it that different from what you're seeing covering a US race?
Yeah, it's a little different. There's definitely, I would say, sometimes at US races, the crowd is a little more local. They're not necessarily cycling fans. And at these races, a lot of the local people come out, but you also see, you see a lot of faces over and over again. It would be sort of like if you had season tickets to a, you know, to a team that plays in a stadium and you see the same people every week or whatever. You know, there's just a huge crowd of people that follow around and they go to all the races. And then there's also something I see here a lot that I don't see in the States so much is that, you know, usually when the race takes off, if I'm not on a moto, then I'm like bolting to my car to go jump around the course. And I don't really see in the US, I don't see fans doing that.
Right.
Whereas here, when the race takes off, there's a significant chunk of the fans run to their cars and do exactly what I do.
Yeah. And that was my experience. Thankfully we didn't have to do it in a car, but that was the awesome thing about seeing Flanders. And we didn't even know, but we're like standing on one climb. And then as soon as the pack went by, I mean, everybody just turned around and started sprinting through this farmer's field. And we were like, we're following them.
Yeah. And the people really have it dialed in and, they know exactly where to go. There was one race that I worked. I've done so many since I've been here. I can't even remember the names of some of these races. There was one I did in France and they actually gave me a driver. And I would say, you know, normally on a good, you know, good 200K road race, I should be able to get to four or five spots. If it's not a circuit. And, this guy got me to, I think at least a dozen spots. It was unbelievable. We would just bolt to a place and we'd be right off the course, a really good scenic spot. He knew, you know, we weren't just going to random spots. He knew the good photogenic spots. And we'd get there and I wouldn't have to wait more than a minute for the riders to come through. And then immediately we're running back to the car. I mean, it was an incredible day.
That sounds amazing. Did he speak any English?
No. It didn't really matter. I mean, he knew what I wanted and,
yeah.
And, yeah, that it was quite an experience.
Yeah. That makes it even better. How's your French going?
Not great. I can, my vocabulary has expanded a lot, but it's just on the comprehension side. It's still, I can't speak it at all, but I can understand a lot more.
Yeah.
So yeah. It'll get there.
Yeah, for sure. And then, once cyclocross season rolls around, what's your plan? Do you think you're going to be traveling to Belgium? Or are you going to like hang around France? And what do you got plotted out? Anything yet?
Oh, I'll probably go to Belgium quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I still haven't really talked to clients or anything for this upcoming season, but it's fairly easy to get up there. Most of the courses are about a 3-hour drive from where I am.
Oh, that's excellent.
So yeah,
that's just crazy. I mean, it's still the thing that's mind boggling. I mean, of course, you know, where I'm at, it's not as big of an issue because mid-Atlantic and East Coast is so compact, but you know, you sit there and you talk to these folks who drive 4 or 5 hours a weekend to go to their quote local race. You're in another country and it's only a 3-hour drive for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. I mean, I'm obviously in Northern France, but yeah, it's, right. And Flanders is kind of, it's the western part, but it's kind of, well, I guess it's not really so southern. But anyway, it's not that far away. And yeah, all the races are just in this really compact area. So, I got to figure out how I'm going to handle it. One thing I'm adjusting to is figuring out in the US, I kind of knew how to do everything very inexpensively. I could get to the rate, could keep my expenses down. And, haven't quite figured that out here yet. I got to get that dialed in.
Yeah. Just got to start like camping on the side of the road.
I've looked into that. So, well, some of these races are at campgrounds actually.
Yeah.
So there might be some synergies there, as they say.
Well, our friend, Bruce Buckley started doing that a lot. He had his little, camper that he'd be pulling with his car for US races to keep his expenses down.
Interesting. Yeah. Definitely car camping is definitely an option.
Yeah. That's funny. It'll be interesting too. Once as you continue to show up at these races, like we, you know, domestically, you have your little, our little tribes of photographers. You know, it's a little different for road, but then cross, you're definitely seeing the same people mountain bike. That was the thing for me, like doing the World Cup mountain bike scene. It took me, it probably took me 2.5 years just to sort of integrate myself into that group of photographers. So it'll be interesting once you, once everybody starts seeing you there a lot, how much you can get into that that club.
Yeah, I have to say, I feel like I integrated already pretty well into that.
Nice.
One thing that, because I knew some of these guys from before, and a lot of the guys in Belgium speak English, so that helps.
Yeah.
But one thing I noticed that's really, that has just struck me about the cross races here was that the courses are not huge. I mean, you know, the piece of property they're on is fairly similar to what you'd see at a US race. But after the start, I never see any of the guys until the finish.
You're like, where are they going?
Yeah, I feel like they must have secret spots or something that I haven't quite figured out. So I don't know. I might have to start, you know, pick one and follow them or something and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, that's when you got to go back to the to the old races and watch them on TV and try it. Because, you know, we have our definite favorite Belgian photographers, and you can always sort of key in on them and where they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And those guys must be showing up more. I'm sure you'll see them at road races now, because they're going to be wherever Vanderpool and Wout are.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, well, I see David a lot at road races, especially in, you know, up north, because he shoots for Het Nieuwsblad, I think, the Belgian paper.
Sure.
So he's got to go to a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Sweet. And so where was it that you got to run into some of our cyclocross friends?
I wasn't actually working at that race. I went up there. I've been having a problem with one of my cameras, and I wanted to go to a race to kind of test out something in like real race conditions. So I went to it was a UCI 1.2 called Flèche Chardonnays. And yeah, I didn't really know what to expect. And then I looked at the start list and I saw that the CCB team was going to be there. And they're a New England based team that does, at least for the last few years, they've done a couple blocks in Europe in the spring and in the late summer. So I got to see Lane Maher and Spencer Petroff were there.
Yeah, that's cool. That must have been pretty cool. And then you were able to sit down and chat with them for a while. And, you know, we're going to listen to those conversation that you had. But what, you know, what's kind of your takeaway? You know, what did you all chat about?
We chatted a bit about just kind of how, you know, what they've done since the end of the season. Although Lane's had, you know, he had kind of he can tell his story in the interview, but he had a little bit of a injury. I guess Spencer did too, but the timing was not the same for both of them. So, you know, Spencer had his concussion, and then Lane had, oh boy, now I can't remember if it was a collarbone.
I think it was his collarbone, yeah.
But that came at not a great time for him, because he missed nationals. But he was there. But we talk about that a little bit in the interview. But yeah, I was just kind of interested in, you know, I mean, they're over here racing road. They're doing, you know, they're doing some really hard races. And that's kind of, you know, it's just one of the themes that comes up again and again is sort of, you know, what's the best preparation for cross season? And so I just wanted to ask those guys a little bit about that. And yeah, just sort of what, you know, what, how does that fit in with their season overall? It's kind of interesting. You know, Lane's done a lot of stuff like with the national team and things that I actually, when I was talking to him, I'd forgotten about that on the road. You know, he's done some pretty big junior races. So he kind of knows the scene over here. And Spencer does as well. He knows what he's doing in these European races. So it's definitely interesting to talk to them.
Yeah, it's kind of neat that those guys get that opportunity. And it's also, you know, it's what we talk about a lot, that it's like you want to see these guys who do cyclocross. It seems like one of the keys to success that we see for the Belgian guys for cyclocross is that they all do these really big roadblocks, and especially like these smaller races. So it's kind of interesting that they're implementing that in you know, I know all the craze now for the roadies is like, oh, we got to start racing cyclocross because we're going to be like Vanderpool. But I wonder, you know, I wonder if it's almost, if there's going to be more of a push to, for some of these guys to race in Europe, not only during the cross season, but also the road season. I for me, I think that would be one of the keys to sort of seeing Americans have more success during cross season.
Oh, I agree for sure. I think that would be great. I know there's a lot of pressure from sponsors to be racing in the U.S., you know, to be in front of the U.S. crowds. But I do think as far as bringing up the level of U.S. riders overall, it'd be good to have them over here more. And then, you know, selfishly, of course, I'd love to see them over here more.
Yeah.
but, you know, another, when you were just mentioning Vanderpool, it reminded me that there have been some grumblings from, maybe grumbling's the wrong word, but you know, if you go back and look through the U23 and junior results at the World Championships over the years, there's a lot of names on there that for, you know, the cross worlds, there's a lot of names on there that went on to be good pro road riders and never raced cross again. And some of those guys have been publicly saying that they're sort of regretting that. And now that they see Vanderpool having success in both, they'd like to go back to cross. So that could be, I don't know, that could be an interesting trend, or maybe it'll just be a blip. I don't know, but it'd be something to watch in the next season or two.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I'm sure through all of this Vanderpool hype and everybody rethinking that trend, you know, my whole thing has been like, you know, in the Lance Armstrong days, it was 90 RPMs. You know, that was the key to road racing success. That now it's, that has now been replaced by racing cyclocross in the off season. But it just reminded me. I was like, I wonder if like you need to go track down Francis Moret and see if he's like pissed off that he's been doing this for years and nobody noticed, and now all of a sudden Vanderpool does it and it's this big new thing.
Well. Yeah, I mean, well, I know where you're coming from, but I mean, with all due respect to Francis Moret, I mean, he didn't show up at Amstel Gold and just, you know, and win right on his first try.
But come on, he did okay in a Giro time trial.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Okay, I'll give him that.
Yeah, he's just one of the guys. He's one of the few that I think has successfully, at least over the past decade, be able to integrate both of those.
Yeah, well, you know, is it Gaudre? I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but it was, you know, he came in like fourth in the Giro, I think.
Yeah. For what it seems like, the French are into that, like Venerini too, right? I mean, there are guys out there that they seem like, you know, all joking aside, that's the one. Federation that seems to be okay with their athletes doing both.
Yeah, that's a good point. You will see, and you know, Chynell was pretty good on the road too.
Yeah,
you do see more of that. If you look through the French results, you see some surprising names. That, I mean, these guys are so strong. Someone like Kyle Majan. You know, he'll show up at more or less a local cross race and he'll just win it. And then he just goes home and it's like, that was his training ride or something. I don't know. But
yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there are about 10 other names that I'm seeing like a vision of Taylor Jones, like hovering over me right now, telling me the 10 names that we're forgetting who are great in both.
Yeah. You have to record like a follow. You can do a follow up like correction / just list of all the people we missed.
Regardless, the point still stands. But yeah, and then the funny one, you know, we'll see if Vanderpool is able to like pull off a result in Albstadt. That's going to be the road too far, because it's like cyclocross and road seem, they're basically the same, you know. I mean, it takes some skill to get from the skilled road riders can do okay in cyclocross, but then like moving over to mountain bike is just a completely different beast.
Yeah. And well, you know, I was thinking about this the other day.
I think Ethan has frozen on me.
Uh-oh, can you hear me?
So are you back?
Am I back?
Yeah.
Okay. I was gonna say, I wonder if if Vanderpool could be the, I mean, has anybody had, I mean, surely at some point, somebody's probably had the cross, a man, I'm thinking on the men's side, has had the world champion jersey on the road and in cross, maybe.
Yeah, someone I don't, like, I mean, that's, yeah, we were joking about that. He could be the next Pauline Ferrand-Prevot.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where I was going with that. Yeah. That would be, yeah, that would really be something.
Something aspirational for his future. That'll really finally be.
Yeah, well,
a
he's going to have to start coming up with loftier and loftier goals.
Yeah. Yeah, like the yeah, it's going to be the Vanderpool slam, whatever that is. Well, awesome, Ethan. Dude, it was great chatting with you, and hopefully we can make this a more regular segment, cuz I love having you over there in Europe and being able to see the work that you're doing, and also catch up with you to see what's going on in your life and also in the world of cycling from that vantage point.
Yeah, that'd be great. I would love to. It's been great to catch up with you as well.
Awesome. All right, we're gonna listen to these interviews now. Lane Mayer and Spencer Petrov and Ethan.
Teammates again.
We are.
And yeah.
Having a blast.
What was that experience like for you at Nash? I was a little surprised to see you there. It was cool though. I mean, it was really cool to see you in the pit. What was, you know, how was that weekend for you?
I enjoyed it a lot because it kind of got me out of the funk of just sitting inside and staying at home and actually getting to go to the race, and still got like the cross vibes. So it was cool. Right. And it was fun just to run around the pits. Like, it wasn't a boring race to be in the pits. I was actually running like every half lap to clean the bike. So it was fun.
Right. Yeah. That was definitely a race where you got some action in the pits.
Yeah, definitely. Got some experience. So if the whole bike racing thing doesn't work out, be a good mechanic.
I think you're going to be just fine, buddy.
So you obviously had a pretty good weekend there.
Yeah. I did a lot of running myself, but in some different shoes and with a bike on my shoulder. But yeah, it was a really good weekend for me personally. For the team, really, we had a lot of success. But I was really happy with that, with the season I had, getting taken out of the first half with my concussion and not really knowing, you know, it's one of those injuries where there's no date, it's not a cast for 6 weeks. And so it was touch and go for a while, and the training was as well. And so, I mean, winning a national championship is a perfect way to end a season. So I was really, really happy about that.
And then after nationals, I saw you at Pontchâteau.
Yes.
So you did some racing after that. And then how long did you race cross after that?
I went all the way to Worlds, to the World Championships.
Oh, right,
okay. So I didn't go all the way through the end of February over here in Belgium, but I went to Worlds, and that was really, really good as well. I felt like my fitness was actually better at Worlds than it was at Nationals. Nationals was such a unique course and a unique day, and I think I was very strong and very fit, and running suits me, bike handling suits me, elevation suits me. There was a ton of factors that went my way, and I think it was a race that you needed to race smart. Like, it was definitely a fitness thing, but you saw so many of these guys with less experience or don't have the head on the shoulders all the way just go out and gun the first lap and the whole shot and everything, and I was rolling kind of back. And then, you know, if you go into the red line too early in a course like that, you can't, you're not getting that back. It is definitely really hard. And so some smarts helped me there. But then, you know, after the first lap, it was really all kind of, you got to go then. But I was definitely really fit in Europe at the end of the year. That was definitely the peak of where I was at all year, coming back from that concussion, which was, I was happy that I could get there. And I had a new coach last year, and so it was really good to see the numbers come up and everything kind of get put together there, because there were so many factors that got in the way that weren't in our control. But that was my first trip to Europe for cross for that season. And so I did three races. I did the Pontchâteau World Cup, and then I did the Hoegaarde World Cup, and then Worlds in Denmark. And so those first two World Cups were kind of, it's always that first race over there is a little bit of a wake-up call. And I definitely had a slow season just with how stuff went and just figuring everything back out. And the first World Cup, we start off the line and immediately European racing's hard. I just remember it going, everyone was going so hard in the whole shot. And I was just like, oh my God, I forgot how hard. My arms hurt on the court. Like, I've never had that sensation before where there was just like, I can't find words. Dude. Your arms hurt today?
Yeah.
All right, buddy. We got to get the curls going. Don't you work out. We'll do some P90X or something. Mm. But that was a wake-up call, and I didn't have a great start. I had to work my way up through the field and then rode really well. Found myself in lead group until I flatted. But then the weekend after that, I was like, okay, had a bad start. We ride a uphill start over a flyover and then through a ton of chicanes, another important start. I was like, I'm going to rip it. I'm not going to mess up this time. And I did, and I hole shot it, and I led most of the first lap and did what I talked about earlier about having race smarts. And I spent way too many matches on that first lap and got in over my head. And then I actually was able to hold the reins in for a top 15, which was really good. And then Worlds was just luck out of my hand. You know, it starts really important at that course before you cross over the, it's not a river, but the waterway. And then through the pits, and I got chopped pretty bad twice on the start straight. And so I was like 40, 50 coming through. And then at that point, with how tight and narrow that course was, it was an absolute scrum. I was just in the back, and I couldn't do anything for about a lap and a half because there's just nowhere to go. And I was stupid on that first lap and impatient. I was like, oh, I'll try and hop the barriers. And over the second one, there was just no room to go, and I had to like jump over the bars and roll because it was a stupid move. But then from there, once it finally filed out after that first lap, I was able to start moving through groups and went from the 40s up to 15th, 16th in the end. So it was super happy with that. My lap times were great, and that was like the biggest thing for the fitness is going back and looking at those. And it's like, okay, could have been good. There was mistakes obviously made, but I was happy to end the year on a high note with winning nationals. Everything else was, I mean, you can call it a bonus. I wanted glory, obviously. And I'll admit that, but I was happy with how it went, with where I had the fitness and getting there after the rough season. So
after Worlds, did you just kind of shut it down and take some time off the bike, or cause now you're here racing road. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you have a pretty long road program planned? I mean, this is a team that obviously races a lot. I mean, you're here in Europe racing. They've, you know, do a pretty ambitious program. Mm-hmm. This question is for you too, Lane. I mean, how do you sort of do that transition from cross season to road season? I know your transition from cross the road Lane was obviously quite a bit different this year.
Yeah.
But like, how does that, how do you kind of shut it down and then start it back up again? What's that usually like for you anyway?
Years past, 2 years ago, I went straight from Worlds, and I took 5 or 7 days off and then did a stage race and started my road season early with the Valley of the Sun, which was nice because it allowed me to do the Paris-Roubaix block for the juniors, which was cool. So I got to carry that fitness over. But later in the season, it definitely had an impact on where I was fitness-wise and just overall, like, fatigue. Like, I couldn't keep going. So then the following year, after Valkenburg Worlds, I think it took 3 or 4 weeks off, which wasn't, like, too much, but it was enough just to kind of really take some time off and recover from the long cross season. And that worked out better because early season was a little rough, but when it counted, I was good and I was happy for doing that. And then this past season, I got my first ever, like, 2 months off the bike completely. So I didn't really have to worry about the transition. I kind of just started spinning around in January and then training the end of January for road season.
How were you going crazy being off the bike, or how was that? Did you get into kind of a groove where you were feeling good and recovered? And
yeah, I got into kind of rhythm of just I was kind of bored. I didn't have much to do.
Right, that's what I was
just
wondering.
Kind of go to school and come home, so I didn't really have anything else to do, so it's kind of just relaxing. But yeah, it was a little difficult to start back, like, get the training going again because it was winter and cold and wasn't anywhere warm, so it was just kind of tough way to start things back on the trainer, but definitely happy with the way things are going right now. So, yeah.
Cool. And so how did you kind of get your road season going? And, you know, the funny thing I'm realizing as I'm asking you these questions that I totally just think of you guys as cross racers because that's where I see you all the time. But, you know, you might not think of yourself that way at all. Like maybe your road season is more important than your cross season. I don't know. You can correct me if I'm, you know, kind of wrong on that. Because as I say, I kind of think of you guys as cross racers first because that's where I'm I see you so much.
Yeah, for personally, that's where my focus is just a little bit more. But when I'm in road season, it's like 100% focus for the road. But when it comes time for cross, that's like the overall, that's like the big picture for me.
Are you thinking kind of about, so if you look at your schedule overall, do you kind of think about how, are you thinking like, I want to use this, the road racing as a way to make my cross racing better? Or you're just, I'm all in on road and accomplish as much as I possibly can. And then.
In the beginning of the season up until like the middle of July, it's road season. I'm just racing, but it's like the end of July, August is when I usually start to think like, all right, now I gotta make sure I don't do too much.
Right.
So I can kind of transition into it. But, yeah, that's how I view it.
What about you, Spencer? Kind of the same way or do you look at it differently?
Similar to Lane where he said, okay. Where Lane was talking about how he's focused on cross a little bit more, that's definitely where I'm at myself. Yeah. And it's funny you say that. Some of my European friends or people will be like seeing me over here in the road and they're not confused, but for them that's normal. But not many Americans, when you look at some of the older pros, aren't doing that these days. Obviously, Powers and TJ did that for a time, and Hyde has done that himself. But cross is my goal as of now. But I am very, this year I think I'm planning to step up my road game and doing more and wanting to have, I've always been focused when I've raced on the road and junior national team and good teams that I've raced for. And I've been very fortunate to race for those teams. And so I definitely focus when it's time. And then this season I've definitely wanted to have a good road season. After Worlds, I took 4 weeks off. And kind of like Lane said, you don't really know what to do. For me at first when I got back, I'd been on the road for 90 something days. It just got so cold in New England, like Lane was talking about. Once November hit, I just kind of started surfing down south in places where the weather was good. And we were racing so much that, you know, some weeks would be for traveling and then some I could train. And that was really good. And with the concussion I had, I really needed the training more than anything. The reason I started racing was just because I needed UCI points. In my mind, I was like, I'm just losing so many with the rolling calendar. And I just, you have to have them, especially when it goes to Europe and the nationals are so important that I think I started at Gloucester and I'd only ridden my bike like a week. I had no fitness or training. It was just, and it hurt. It was horrible to be out there. Truthfully, it was so much fun. I was so happy. But it was just, yeah, it wasn't the same rider who I'd been. And so that was definitely the training that I did in the South was important to how the success I had towards the end of the season. Mm. But then finished Worlds, had been on the road for a while. That first week was nice to be off. But then just stir crazy because I'd been doing so much of training and so obsessed in that world. It was wild. And I wanted to take 4 weeks where I didn't ride the bike. And Lane said he does something similar in his off season. I think it's good for people our age to take some time off and do that and let the whole body recover, especially with all the travel and, you know, you're burning the wick with school and racing, training, living life. It's hard. And so 3 to 4 weeks can be really good for you, I think. Towards the end of it, a little bit too much, but at least you're happy to get back on the bike. And that's what I did. And so then I, spent that whole month actually in Massachusetts, but then after that I went down to Texas. My parents are down there now, left Ohio.
Oh, I was wondering why, when I look up results in the USA Cycling, you know, if you go on their website and look up results, it has like Denton, Texas or something.
Yeah,
is Dallas. It Denton? Yeah, it's right outside Dallas, right?
Okay. Yeah.
I was wondering if you had moved there or something.
McKinney
or,
specifically.
Oh, it was McKinney, okay, right.
Who's there? Alex Howes isn't there. Who's, it's on Sunweb. There's another big pro.
Oh, Chad Haga?
Chad Haga.
Okay.
He's never been there when I've been there. I've only been there a few times, but I'd love to hook up with him sometime. Seems like a cool dude on Twitter.
well, maybe he'll listen to the podcast or get in touch.
We'll send the link. We'll all DM him the link and hopefully it happens.
So we guys did a UCI road race today. So, and thanks again for, I'm keeping you from eating now, so we'll wrap this up quickly. But can you just tell me a little bit about how the race went today? Well, this is the biggest race you've done on this block, right? I mean, you did a few Kermesses when you first got here, and then this was a bigger race.
Probably the biggest road race I've done so far, like in terms of importance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd definitely say it's the biggest one I've done. So it was a shock.
Yeah, but you had a pretty good outing. You did great. I mean,
it was a shock. You did great, man.
Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
You did too.
We were, Papa was hurting.
I knew it was going to be really hard. So, my mentality going into it was just, there's guys who are really, really good. So you're not obligated to be chasing every attack. Just try to finish and be like smart about it. Cause I mean, it's a long race and it's a really hard hilly race. So just kind of feel it out. Which is what I did, and it worked out well for the most part. Definitely some times where I think after every climb except the final climb, I was off the back trying to chase back on just because someone always just blows up.
Right.
And then I found myself on the wrong side of the split like after every crest of the hill. So that was that's definitely something I needed to work on moving forward. But yeah, it was cool. The scenery was awesome. I did take it in a few times when I wasn't staring down at the road, but yeah, I was happy with it.
Cool. Yeah. Did you think, what do you need to work on in terms of, do you feel like you need better positioning skills or things like that? I know that's one thing people talk about a lot is that in European racing, there's, you know, positioning is so much more important because you're not on the like wide American roads.
Yeah.
You feel like you were getting behind guys. You wouldn't get behind necessarily if you could move up more easily.
That was definitely my thing I need to work on, especially after today. In the past, I've been pretty good at that. Not the best, but like it's usually not a problem. But today it definitely caused me some difficulties. But I was trying to feel the race out and not trying to like spend all my energy trying to fight for the position, rather save it so I didn't box myself. But now I know. So going to the next one, I have a better idea of what I can do and how to race it.
And before I ask you, Spencer, about your race, I just want to mention that I did mention one rider before the start that you guys should watch.
You did, and he won.
Anyway,
yeah,
I just want to get that on the record.
that's a fact.
So how did the race go for you?
A little different to Lane, but at one point we're actually both off the back together. And we chased back on, and we got back in the main bunch. So that was really good, but different in the aspect of I have some more experience over here than Lane. I think I'm a year older, 2 years older.
I think two.
2 years older, racing age, 2 years older.
You 19 or 20?
I'm 20 right now, but yeah, no, my racing age is 21, but you're 19. So mm-hmm. 2 years. I did a big block over here last summer, and I did a lot of 1 days. Didn't do this race. But positioning and technical and pack smarts is something that I excel at, I would say. And I never really found myself too many times where I was like, oh, I'm too far back, or, oh, God, I don't know how to get up there. And so
I saw Spencer at the front all the time today.
Sneaky snake. You got to be. You got to know how to do that, and you got to know how to descend, too. I mean, you go up a lot, too, but you also go down a lot as well. And so there's so many times where it gets super strung out, and if there's going to be breaks in that because of going over the top, those gaps will open. And when you get down to the bottom, you know, the guys at the front are just going to rest. And then the other people, they'll have to sprint on. Or when we're off the back, we have to gun it to get back on. And then it's the next climb. Once you get past 60K, they just come. You go up, you go down, and then it's again. Mm-hmm. You have to go. And so for me, just I could pass half the peloton on the descent if I was doing it right. And so that was good. But like I said, took almost a month off after Worlds, and then I did a big base, which was really good. That was something that I was really happy and able to get a bunch of miles in. My intensity's been a little low. Had some crazy life stuff happened before I came over here, and so had to do that and spend some time getting that figured out first. And so didn't get all the intensity that I wanted, and I feel a little bit on the back foot there. I've got the engine for it, and the numbers are good, but I think I gotta lose a few pounds and get some more intensity in me. This is let's see. We got here on Tuesday, flew Monday, we raced Wednesday, then we raced Friday. We're already three races deep. We've been here for less than a week. We're racing the next 2 days.
That's one thing about this place. I mean, the level is obviously high, but just the sheer amount of racing that you can do in a short time is incredible.
Oh, it's totally good. For me, though, this is, I did two races in the U.S. before I came here. Don't have a lot of intensity in me because I had one day of intensity that's not racing so far since Worlds. So you can imagine, I haven't done it, but I've got some 30-hour weeks in me. So what's the word I want to use here? Oh God, I'm very efficient right now. So when I come, I don't have the intensity, but once I get over the top and on the flats and everything, I can totally motor. My threshold's great, but it's just all that VO2 stuff that it's not quite there. And on a race that has 9,000 feet of climbing.
Is that how much it was today?
It's like 8 to 9, I think.
Yeah, it's 3,000
meters.
I believe it. I drove a bunch of those. I mean, and yeah. I was really, really surprised by how long and how high those climbs were. I mean, the views from some of those climbs, it was like being up in the mountains.
It was. It totally felt like France or Switzerland. I mean, some of these 3-4K long climbs, and they're long. Beautiful. Most beautiful part about, I've never raced in that region before. Most gorgeous part of Belgium I've ever been to. I mean, stunning. Oh, the training there has to be spectacular.
Yeah. I raced there once before as a junior, and I remember it being like, there were like three stages, and two of them were out in like flatland, and the last day was right around that area.
Right.
We actually did two of the climbs that I've done before today, so I was like, oh, I know where this is. But I remember doing that race and being like, this place is so cool. Because that's what it feels like. It feels like you're like in the Alps, just like up, down, like through like small towns, like trying to dodge some curbs and some buildings as you descend with some corkscrews. So it was cool.
Oh yeah, there were some switchbacks, steep. I mean, it was real climbing. If you weren't ready to climb, it was a bad day to be a little overweight and not be have some intensity in there. But it was wild. People were cut here. There were some guys early in the race. I mean, absolutely all out, going so hard up these things. I'm just watching them. I'm like, yeah, 8 more of these things. How are you going so hard? It was wild. It was fun. I want to come back for sure. I want to do this one.
Me too.
Specifically again.
Yeah, I would like to come back and photograph it with a little more prep. I definitely didn't take it seriously enough in terms of figuring out how to get around the course. But there's a lot of really beautiful places on that course. It would be great to shoot.
It was like one climb I was going up. I almost felt bad for doing it, but I just took like 10 seconds. I was just like looking off the side of the road at the mountains, and then I looked back and no one else was doing it. But
hey,
you're allowed.
That's fun. You need to. That's good. It was really beautiful. Everything was good. There was just one, I think it was over one of the first climbs, and it falls flat. It was falls flat at the top once you got over 3K of categorized climb. But they had kind of clear cut something, not in like, I don't know why. It was still beautiful, but it was from the direction that the wind was coming. And in my mind, there's so many races that go through that region. I was like, some sick person's like, we're going to cut down this forest right here, just 1K, and we're going to make some bike racers suffer. Because it just immediately pinned to the gutter. I was just like, oh my gosh. It was, they were going hard all day. My numbers were, they were big looking at them already. So it was not an easy day on the bike, that's for sure. And Lane here, did you get your official result?
I was 36.
36, yeah.
But I was still happy with it.
No, he was in the main bunch. He finished. Yeah, that was really impressive. Yeah, I personally have one of the couple climbs to go. I finally, we had gotten popped off at a similar time, bridge back in. But there was just an absolute wall. You come up to it and you can just see it's going. I was like, oh no. So I literally
dead straight
heard some British kid go, what the like, F-bomb? Like, what is that? And I was like, man, I don't know either. And it was, you were actually a few people in front of me. You were at the back of that one too. And I was, then a little gap came between us, but sadly no one was too motivated. I think the guys were just demoralized after seeing that and knowing there was more that I was with. So they were just absolutely done. The only people who wanted to work actually weren't the climbers or anything, but the big guys, tall people, bigger than me, who were like, they're definitely really strong, but they're not suited for these. The worker guys, you could tell they were huge.
Yeah.
They wanted to roll and we could just bomb the descents and everything, but the peloton was a little bit faster. We got close. I flatted. But I think those guys weren't, I ended up catching them again and they never caught back on. Mm-hmm. So, it was going to be the end for me there. And then we got to the finishing circuits and they pulled me, and I'm not going to say that I was bummed about that. that was nice. But it was an experience and I'm happy. We got more races, like you said, tomorrow and the next day, and then another UCI one day, Sunday of next week.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Leon, mm-hmm. So.
And then is that the end of this Euro block for you, or is it?
We're gonna race Monday after next Sunday.
Okay.
But then we fly out Tuesday. But that Monday race is a 6 or 6:30 Kermesse, so PM.
Oh, okay. Well.
Yeah.
Well, it gets dark here at like 10, so.
It does. It's just I think it's not. I don't think it's close.
It's gonna be a long night.
I think that's a 9-hour drive back. It's just packing, eating, all that can become pretty tight. We'll see.
I think we might as well just go to the airport right after the race.
Oh my god, that would be nice actually.
We have to wake up at 4 in the morning anyway. After
that's the biggest thing, is the early morning flights here. You know, you got to beat that Brussels traffic. It will be leaving no later than 4:35.
Yep. That'll be a fun 2 days for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm getting up the Starbucks on the way out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think I don't want to keep you any longer from the food. So
thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, thank you. This is awesome.